I'm James Brierton in Charlotte, and welcome back to the Carolina Weather Group. Well, if you've ever watched a hurricane, tropical system, other big weather system move off the coast of North Carolina, you may have seen the iconic camera out there in the ocean, a live webcam watching maybe an American flag whipping around in the wind. Well, that flag is out on what is called Frying Pan Shoals Tower. And we are lucky enough to know the man who happens to own it. His name is Richard Neal. He's been a guest before on the Carolina Weather Group podcast, and we recently had a chance to catch up with Richard, who had, matter of fact, just come back ashore to the mainland after visiting his tower. So we're going to play for you our recent conversation with Richard Neal from the WeatherPods Disaster Relief Telethon. And in case you maybe didn't catch the conversation with him the first time around, in about 10 minutes or so, we'll take you back into the Carolina Weather Group archive so you could catch up from the very beginning of the story. But here now, our latest conversation with Richard Neal, the man who lives out on a decommissioned lighthouse off the coast of North Carolina. Take a look. I am James Brierton in Charlotte. Jay Gibson is back with us, and Richard Neal back on dry land after coming home from his Frying Pan Shoals. It's a tower. I sometimes refer to it as a lighthouse. The man can correct me if I'm wrong, but he's sometimes out there in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. It's good to see you. Thanks for taking the time.
Oh, appreciate it, guys, so much. Glad what you guys are doing.
Now, you just sent me here a moment ago. For folks who aren't familiar, we do have a live webcam that is broadcasting from your tower. And let me go ahead and put this on the screen so people can see it. We're looking at it right now. I don't know if it makes you homesick now that you're not there and we're looking at it via YouTube. But tell us a little bit about Frying Pan Tower and how you came to acquire it.
You know, it's one of those crazy things back in 08, 09, when the nation was suffering through all the crisis and apparently nobody had any money. I thought, well, maybe the government's going to give away some things at a decent price. So I did a little bit of browsing one evening and came across several odd things on an auction. One being an old warehouse. Yep, swipe away on that one. Another one being a bunch of FEMA trailers. Swipe away. Next thing being this really strange looking box on over water. What is this? And paid attention to it. Never heard about it. A lot of people never have. It was originally a U.S. Coast Guard lighthouse designed to help keep the ships off the shallow waters, the shoals, 32 miles offshore. About a year and a half later, when the government attempted to auction it one time, was unsuccessful. They put it up for a sealed bid auction, and some crazy guy in the auction. So I ended up with the tower. And no idea what to do with it, nor even why it appealed to me.
Well, we love what you've been doing with it, and we'll ask you about that in a moment. But I want to draw a weather connection for folks, because obviously you get to observe some impressive weather,
yes,
impressive ocean conditions. But I think the world came to know you, or at least I did, when you put that American flag up. You'll have to remember specifically which storm it was, but you guys had a live webcam on a flag just whipping out as a hurricane, yep, as you guys often get right out there, was coming through, and those winds were just ripping it. Which storm was that, Rich?
Oh, gosh, let's see. Was that Arthur? That was probably Arthur, maybe Matthew, Florence?
Florence was what I think one that was a Cat 5 that went down to a Cat 4 and was easing into the coast. Yeah. But that one had that tattered flag that was one it was known for. It was still hanging in there. Everybody was pulling for it until dark.
That's right. Yeah, people were staying on the live cam in the pitch black because our flag light wasn't working at the time. We had 1,200, 12,000, I don't know, in the middle of the night. And is that the one where they named the flag Kevin? I can't remember.
That sounds like something the internet would do. But I think you ended up on cable news because it was really showing the strength of this hurricane offshore where other people weren't able to get observations. Right. How is it that you even stay connected out there? And how many miles offshore are you?
Well, technically speaking, we are 32 miles off of the very tip of the closest point, which is Bald Head Island. But generally, we're about 35, 36 miles out, which puts us... yeah, about 6 miles outside of America. So how do we stay connected? I like to joke with people sometimes, say, well, you know, I've got a really long extension cord. But what we ended up doing was we found some smart people that felt like it was probably going to be possible to do a microwave shot, as they say, all the way over to shore. Well, that's great. But then you have to be high because guess what? Flat earthers, this is a curved world and we had to get over the horizon. We found a TV station tower, put some dishes up at about 1,400 feet, aimed them by dead reckoning based on the only point of light we could actually see on land, which was actually the Coswell Beach Lighthouse. little itty bitty blink at night. But I knew that was 318 degrees. So thank you, trigonometry teacher. I was able to calculate by the tangent between the angles of that and the light station that it should be 6 feet, 6 inches to the right of that. And we turned it on and Google popped up on screen. We haven't looked back. We have fixed it a few times and the hurricanes have twisted our dishes, but we do manage to get it back online. So
I'm sure she has a question in a moment.
Sometimes better than at home.
I'm sure she has a question in a moment. And Rich, I'm going to ask a question that people at home are probably wondering. Why have you held on to this thing? And what are you hoping to do with it? I know you've been doing lots of work.
Well, you know, it's funny. If you have something that needs a lot of repair and you're a teenager, you call a bunch of guys and buy some pizza and beer and they come help you work on it or help you move or whatever. And that's basically what I was doing for the first 8 years, not realizing it. Finally had an epiphany of the only way to get this thing fixed is if I gave it away. So I gave away all of my ownership of it, turned it into a nonprofit only for the restoration of it. There are a few people that own some pieces, but they don't want to be embarrassed by the fact of who they are. So they do help out financially, help with it some. But the biggest part of this is that we don't need it for navigation anymore. We have, you know, satellites, we have GPS, everything else. What we do need is we need a point out there where many, many people go out to go fishing that they can make a radio call or they can check on the weather or, and as the case has been over the last several years, they could actually, you know, get saved. Get them out of a boat that's not working, pull up a diver that's nearly drowned and fly them back to shore. And during the same time frame, we've made it so that it's a research location, such as the camera link that I just sent you that talks about the wave heights, such as on top of the tower, the NASA piece of equipment that we just put up. I just got it up there. It looks up in the sun. It looks down at the ocean, checking the emissivity, if that's the right word, of what's coming off the Earth, what's coming into the Earth. And it's one of just a couple hundred sites around the world. Only took me 10 years to talk them into doing it. And of course, we have folks like John Hopkins, MIT, Cape Fear Community College is going to do some work with us on our ROVs. And I'm just so excited because anytime I can get a young person to understand that the ocean is not a flat surface of water, it's a world underneath there. I just love it because then they will care about it and do something with our future. And there's a lot of energy out there. There's wave power and everything else. So right now we're 100% solar operated while we're not there.
Very cool. Yes. You know, what, and James, you're right. I did have a question. So of course, mine's going to be, and I've been up to the Chesapeake Tower and done some spearfishing over there, right? And you know, the waves are just smacking into these poles, right? The stilts. Yeah. And you think, man, I bet that thing rocks a lot, right? Like you sleep out there for days at a time and weeks. Like, you know, I know we interviewed you about this, but I know some of these folks listening would love to hear, what is it like to live on that thing for several days? Is it rough? Is it loud? You know, or
it is funny because you've heard people say that in a hurricane or in a big storm, it's just so loud. You hear the noise out there. You hear constant wind, or unless you're in traffic like I am right now with a motorcycle in front of me. But we hear a steady hum. Anytime we have winds above about 15 knots, 18 miles an hour, and the average wind out there is about 12 miles an hour. Well, mind you, we have our hurricanes where I've been on top with gusts to 130. Just, I couldn't read really that high because I think our anemometer only read to about 115 maybe. And I will tell you, you don't want to stand right on the edge on that because it does hit you full force. But if you stand back about 15 feet or in the middle even, it's just kind of bubbling winds and rolling around. It's just a vortex. And so it's only 50. So generally it's a noisy place, but as far as movement goes, anybody that's ever had a child, I almost absolutely guarantee rocks that baby more so than we are up in the tower in the worst of weather. It's almost not anything. So if you actually are in it and it's a hurricane, you'll feel it, but it's not in any way distressing.
Wow. So the foundation, in other words, is really solid.
Yeah. The legs are actually 296 feet down into the soil based on the engineering drawings and how they put it together, which I find just incredible.
Wow. Wow. Well, that's my question, James. I mean, that's impressive. Yeah.
Well, one of these days I'm hoping I can come out there and do some volunteer work. And I think it was just an amazing opportunity.
Yep. We still need to, he still has that open invitation for us to come out there and ride out a hurricane with him. So We're waiting on the right time, Richard.
From a research standpoint, we can do that. Now, don't mislead people. We would not say, hey, everybody come out and just have a great time during a hurricane. That's a little bit crazy. That sounds like a bad movie or something. No, what we do have is we do have the ability to, I believe, safely do some really important research to continue to tell people what's going on with the weather, what's happening. And I love the fact, like I say, that we've got a live data feed of our weather conditions out there. We've got the live visuals, also have some that expose us. And again, it's just about, it's hard to imagine exposing people to what's going on just 30 miles offshore. That's so foreign to anything we all experience.
Well, folks want to learn more, they can see it on screen there, fptower.org. Glad you're back on dry land, Rich, and we appreciate you taking the time to catch up with us today. Always good to see you.
You guys are awesome. Thanks a lot. Take care now.
Thank you, Richard.
So cool. And one of these days, I'm going to try to get out there. I'm just going to have to convince my wife. That's going to be the tricky part. Well, as promised, in case you are unfamiliar and want to learn more about frying pan shoals, we've had the privilege to talk to Richard before, and this previous conversation actually came during the holiday season while he was out there on the tower. And if you want to take the story back to our first meeting, here it is now as we dig back into the Carolina Weather Group archive.
Welcome to the Carolina Weather Group. We're happy to have you this evening. And man, I am excited about this show. We have featured frying pan tower, frying pan shoals out off the coast of North Carolina several times during our hurricane coverage that you most likely have tuned into from one time or another. And I've been wanting to get Richard on the show, and Shay worked his magic and was able to get Richard Neal on the show. Richard is an engineer and the director of frying pan shoals tower out in the Atlantic Ocean where he currently is right now. And it's just hard to believe that technology's come so far along that we can actually talk to Richard, who's out in the middle of the ocean right now. So Richard, welcome to the show. We are happy to have you. And, I just want to talk a little bit. Our first question for you is more of a just kind of getting to know you question. And normally it's how did you get hooked into the weather world? And I know weather plays a little bit of into what you do, but how did you get involved in this project? I mean, this is just such a fascinating story about you guys.
Well, like a lot of guys, after work, I still have my hands on the keyboard and I'm working on things and I'm surfing the web. And this was back in 08, 09. And I was like, well, there's got to be great things that are giving away because we're in a recession and everything's so discounted. And let's search for government surplus in North Carolina. And the first thing that popped up on screen was this big old warehouse. And I'm like, no, that's crazy. You know, swipe right or left, whichever it is. Next one was a whole bank building and then some FEMA trailers and some strange big metal box out on legs in the ocean. And that was kind of that was the fish hook that caught me. So ended up getting it. Won the auction.
A little bit about you, assuming you was looking up stuff in North Carolina. Are you originally from North Carolina or how did you get here?
Well, I was born and raised in Oklahoma, which is not exactly a land of oceans or mountains. And so I had a chance to come do a job interview over here back in the previous couple decades. And I was like, the trees are tall, the ocean's beautiful, you know, so it hooked me. I moved into the Charlotte area where I've been since 99.
I've got to ask you, I personally love Oklahoma. I go out as much as I can to storm chase. So did you have any close encounters with tornadoes in your time out there?
You know, in Oklahoma, it was pretty normal to just, there's the tornado and it's only yay big. And so you drive a little slower so it can stay ahead of you, or you drive a little faster because it's behind you. The one time riding in my dad's pickup truck, banged on the rooftop because back then we could ride in the back. And we were following one about 2 miles ahead of us. And I asked him to hurry up because there was another one behind us about 3 miles behind us. So we just stayed right between the two as we went home that day. Just a normal day. Did not understand the magnitude of the difference between a tornado and hurricanes. Hurricanes are a whole different ball of wax, aren't they?
Yes, they are. They are. We'll talk a little bit about that. So engineering, I know you got some engineering out there. Tell us a little bit about that and what all engineering-wise you do out there right now at the tower?
Well, you know, when I got the tower, when we first came out here, we opened the doors and all the windows were sealed up and there was thick junk all over the floor. It was incredibly filthy. And of course, nothing worked. There was no electricity. There was no running water. You name it, obviously no internet. And so the name of the game was basically, how do we reestablish? And so if you can think of walking into a garage that people had walked out of 2 decades before, leaving most of the tools in there, almost like a put it together puzzle, figure it out and you can make it work, that sort of thing. That was what it was. So found that there were holding tanks of water, found that the wiring was redundant because in the classic military Coast Guard sense, you never modified a circuit. You just added another one and added another one. So, oh my gosh. So it's really stretched my brain, everything from the structural to the mechanical to the electronics to you name it. Again, you don't just hire a plumber out here. You are the plumber.
So. Very interesting. And you know, the first question that pops into my mind here, Richard, is how do you get out there?
Good question. After I bought it, it took me 4 months to get here because I couldn't get a captain willing to bring me out in a boat. He said, there's no ladder on it and you can't get up on it. And I said, well, I was actually a really good climber, so just get me close. But I think what really made him laugh was when I showed up at the dock carrying an extension ladder with hooks on the top. So climbed on it that way. And we do come out by boat when we're carrying things. But more commonly, we just fly out by a Robinson R-44 and land on the helipad, which is our entire rooftop. So it was here a couple times today, dropping off researchers.
Very interesting. So no Jacob's ladder. I mean, you're just strictly helicopter at this point.
Helicopter and boat, because one of the legs does have a reestablishment of handholds. You do have to be a little bit of a monkey to jump from a boat to a leg and then climb up freehand 65 feet of handholds.
And so you're telling me if you're not a fan of heights, that might not be the best way to go.
Not a good idea. But, you know, that's actually how we get the first person on, usually one of the crew. And then we snatch everybody, if you don't like heights, we snatch everybody out of the front of a boat with a hoist and just pull them straight up. And that's actually really, really safe because a person's sitting there with a harness or whatever, and until they get hooked in, they're perfectly safe. They're just sitting in a boat, right? Then we grab them, pull them right up, roll them inside, just tell them to stand up. That's all there is to it. And haven't dropped anybody yet. That's probably a good record, 10 years. So
why was the tower built in the first place?
I'm the old one out of probably all of us. And I remember when we didn't have cell phones and we rolled this little circle on the phone to make it work. So back in the 1960s, there was still the frying pan shoals, and the shoals were shallow and then deep. And then who knows, boats were going aground and wrecking. So because we didn't have GPS and we didn't have Loran, and you could use a sextant or whatever to look at the stars, but it was out here to be the lighthouse. So it's still got the light up in the corner that we don't use anymore because GPS, obviously, but it was purely to keep people from running aground. There's literally hundreds of shipwrecks from here to shore. We're about 32 miles from the closest point. Technically, we're outside of America by about 6 miles.
And speaking of that closest point, for those who may not know, what is that closest point off reference of North Carolina?
A lot of people would be aware of Wilmington, and Wilmington has a bunch of smaller cities flanking it, Southport and Carolina Beach, and coming out to the tip of it, of Bald Head Island. And that's from where the shoals actually continue on outward. So Bald Head Island, which is right over that way. We can see the light of a lighthouse on shore occasionally, just a little faint glimmer, but we don't see light of anything else because we're just too far away.
Sometimes people just like to go out in the ocean, you know, fishing and stuff. Do people ever come by and just say, yell up and say hey to you and whatever?
Yeah, it is interesting. I don't know if it's good or bad, but I've got, I guess people are like, hey, Richard, and my phone number's out there. So I'll get text messages, emails. I think I'm down to, 5,000. Or more emails in the last couple of weeks again. So it's a little tough. I'm amazed you guys could track me down. I'm glad you did. But they'll holler up, Richard, hey, this is so-and-so. And I was out there 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 6 years ago. Sometimes I remember who they are and sometimes I don't. But on a good, flat, calm weekend, we can have 30 boats around here all getting bait fish or catching fish or just hanging out. It's really quite the party.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've done spearfishing at the Chesapeake Light Tower to the north up there. That's a popular spot. And there's
you know, there's a lot of fish. There's a lot of great, you know, fish that hang around these things, you know. It's it's an object in the water. It goes in depth. There's teeming life around it. It's kind
of
neat.
Yep. We've got a lot of bugs underneath this. And bugs, in layman's terms, are lobsters, spiny lobsters. They average about 8 pounds here.
So you kind of think of my next question was going to be about the B&B and, you know, how long that ran for.
Yeah, we were doing that from 2012 when we had our first family stay out here, which was quite interesting. They were like, yeah, we know it's sort of a B&B, right? And then we shifted over in 2018 purely to the nonprofit. And we still have a lot of people come out, but it's not in the sense of coming out and hanging out. It's come out and participate. The walls in here are nice and blue because we had 3 or 4 volunteers a couple of weeks back, clean and scraping, put it all back in order.
How many people do you normally average in a year, Richard, that come out and volunteer? I mean, I know it can vary, but is...
You know, that's a really great question. We've had thousands out, and that's because many, many people will come by in their boat, and then they'll come on up, and maybe they'll carry something out. I occasionally get a call on the Marine Band radio. Hey, Richard, we're here and we brought you that extra water or we brought you some food or we have too much beer and we can't get rid of it. We need your help. So or we have fish that we've caught and they're like, yeah, come on up. Let's share it and have a meal and then you can head out the next morning. But with 8 bedrooms and a crew room in addition and about 6,000 square feet and a rec room and a stainless steel kitchen and a big generator room where we can cut and torch and do all the types of mechanical things you would want to. It's actually got a place for all different kinds of people. You know, we've got people that came out and did nothing but work on our garden in the back corner. So we've got a garden that grows. Go figure.
And for those who are maybe wanting to know, you do a fantastic job on social media, the Facebook page, of just sharing your experiences from day in and day out. And it's a really cool thing. If you go to Facebook and type in Frying Pan Tower, Richard, you do a great job on social media, just kind of showing the behind the scenes look there.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. People ask what the tower is really like and how it survived these hurricanes. And some of the things that I've learned is that the engineers that put it together had a fair amount of experience with what they call Texas Tower or Texas oil rigs, the genre in the 40s and the 50s. So they made this thing stupidly overbuilt. I mean, massively structurally strong. With the legs, I just got a blueprint that I hadn't seen in 10 years. And it actually indicates that when they set the base pilings down, they actually took pipes and then hydraulically rammed them through the legs down into the bedrock to the depth of, if you can imagine this, 296 feet.
Wow.
That's incredible. It's a football field of steel down into the bedrock and then filled up with cement. So, and the casing on the pipe that actually is water level down is multiple layers. So it's approximately 3.5 inches thick. We just, you know, we have to worry more about anything above water and just keep welding on parts there. So, yeah, I've gotten a chance to become a more proficient welder. Since I don't have OSHA looking over my shoulder, it's like, yep, I'll do it right, but I don't have to get it inspected. So again, being outside the country does have some perks, right?
Next question is, it's kind of like just everyday life that we have here, the luxuries of plumbing and power, internet. Mm-hmm. I've seen you were watching the football game a couple of nights ago. You cook up these really nice looking dinners. So how do you get all of that 32 miles out in the Atlantic Ocean?
This is truly a working environment along the lines of, we don't just say, hey, stick a solar panel up there. It'll be great. And you'll love it for 25 years. No, we actually know that they will hold on during a hurricane. We've had solar panels up for 3 or 4 hurricanes now. We know the flags don't last quite as well, but that's another story. And with those solar panels, we still are on conventional solar batteries. So we don't have lithium yet because we work off of a very tight donated budget, obviously. And then if we need to augment it, like tonight when everyone's using all kinds of things, I will run a small little 3K generator by Honda or something like that. But the good news is that we did also resurrect life back into the 40 kilowatt Detroit diesel that has been sitting here ever since the 1960s. And when we took it apart and looked inside at the pistons, everything was put back in almost perfect order. And then they closed the doors and walked away. So all we had to do was get it up and running again. Now we need to get the electrical part out of it, which is the diodes and the rectifiers. And guess what? I'm getting to learn something else. But once I do that, then we'll reach out to our audience and say, be nice to have some resistance heaters bolted back on the wall, and then we'll run that and be warm while we're out here working. So 99% of the time, we're just solar and wind. So we have a couple turbines, and we've got a couple dozen panels and a battery room full of batteries that we watch very closely and monitor. And everything that we do out here, we can also look at and monitor from shore. So, and that was a 5.2 gigahertz microwave dish that we set up, shot to shore 56 miles, talked a TV station into letting us put a dish up on their tower at 1300 feet. And, you know, it's one of those, I can't believe they let us do this sort of stuff, but you know, we get really smart people and then they're excited about it. And then they tell other people, and then we get a phone call, and a gentleman just got on a helicopter today that left, that made a donation, and he spent the day or two out here. I didn't make him work, but he worked anyway. Couldn't stop him.
Jordan, I know you've got the big fun question for us meteorological nerds.
Yeah, so as the Carolina Weather Group, I'd be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit of meteorology while we're here. So what are some of the more memorable storms that have come by in recent times? I mean, I know I'm thinking about Florence and Matthew are probably the obvious ones, but maybe you have one that's maybe not quite so obvious.
Well, Arthur was an amazing thing. I actually was out here with three of my kids and one volunteer, and we planned on flying back by helicopter on a Tuesday with an upper limit of the wind speed of being around 45 miles an hour or so for the helicopter. I think it was a Bell Jet Ranger. And we woke up that next morning to 55 miles an hour constant. So we weren't going anywhere. Surprise, surprise. Had not been out here for a hurricane. And my kids are like, are we going to be all right? Of course we are. It's going to be great. So everything was great. The winds were averaging around 75. They got up to 100 and something during that. And we're all in here and it's very noisy. My daughter points out the window because there's a huge mooring light that's about two-thirds of a mile that way. And it has a 12,000-pound dumbbell weight at the end of a huge chain. And it's the marker for the very end of the shoals. Well, the waves were so big. They're about 30 feet tall. They don't even look like waves. They just look like hills, that it was picking it up and slogging it along. And she says, Dad, is the buoy supposed to be traveling? So it marched off towards Wilmington. And then as the hurricane spun around, you know, we got to the backside of it and the winds were blowing from the other side. We just finished dinner and it blew in one of the back windows, just shattered it. And wind is going everywhere. And the rain's pouring in and we're back there trying to hold a piece of metal against it and get it all put back together. And my daughter's a little upset about this. And I said, it's okay. We were fine. She goes, I'm not worried about the tower, Dad. It made my cake in the oven fall. Unbelievable. So, you know, we've been out for, and I've since found that hurricanes can be really pleasant to watch when there's nothing in the air to hit you but rain. When you're on shore, you have to worry about all kinds of things. You have to worry about trees falling on your houses and that sort of thing. Out here, it's just rain. You wear safety goggles so that it doesn't sting your face too bad. And anything under 100 miles an hour, it's not going to blow you off the top. Over 120 miles an hour, it gets a little dicey. You know, we had some gust to that during a couple of them. And the water kind of comes in everywhere. So it gets a good rinsing, but that's all right.
Does the tower sway at all? Do you get a little bit of that rocking factor?
I'll show you. During the worst hurricane, this is it. That's it. Just enough to make the water wiggle around in the Culligan jug. That's it. You know, puts you to sleep really good. And they are really loud. They are quite noisy. But, you know, you asked the question really that I should answer more directly is, about the weather and how and what are we watching? How do we know when we can go out here? It's only 30 miles out, but the weather here is very different than the weather on shore. On shore, we can have 30 degree days. And out here, because they have this enormous mass of water underneath us, we could be in, you know, t-shirt and shorts or like today, We had a 25 degree temperature drop out here. I mean, it was beautiful. It was 75, and then it went down to 55 for a while. And I'm wearing a jacket because it's cool. So you just, you kind of have to be aware that the ocean is what they would call an ever-changing, never-changing environment. So it's always going to be a little different. And you can only tell about 3 or 4 days in advance as to the true conditions in this one location. Being on top of a hill at the end of the shoals creates a Venturi effect. So the water goes much faster underneath us than it would maybe just a half a mile away. It's quite an interesting place to try and go scuba diving, that's for sure.
I would imagine the waves, you know.
Yeah.
We see storm surge on the coast with landfall and hurricanes. And, yeah, you know, we see these models that are predicting 20, 30 foot waves out in the ocean. But the normal everyday person doesn't get to see that. But you do. I mean, you were just talking about the experience with Arthur. I mean, I'm sure the first time you saw it was like, oh, my gosh. But have you kind of got used to the fact of seeing these huge waves now after being out there so long?
You know, it's funny. The smaller waves, just the 12 footers or so. Those actually impact harder than the big ones. We have these legs that are 42 inches in diameter. So relatively speaking, they're very narrow. But if you catch completely square to the cross pipes at the 12 foot level, a 12 foot wave, you know, the weight of water, it's quite a bit per cubic yard. You feel a just a shudder like that. You know, that was a good one. That hit well. The huge waves, they look strange because they really do look like hills rolling past. And then occasionally one of them will break over like you would see on a, you know, on a small wave on the surf. But then you look across it and you realize that it's breaking over hundreds of feet wide and 7 or 8 feet, the top of it's cresting over. And you're just thinking to yourself, if I had a jet ski, I bet I could ride that all the way to shore. But I don't know.
From what you've told us, it sounds like there's not many things that would cause such a concern that you'd have to evacuate. But I am curious what your emergency procedures are like. What things might it take to get you to have to bug out of the tower? And if so, what's the process?
That's great. Great. We have about four different forms of communication. And that's for knowing what's going on. Of course, we benefit other people out here by having that available for them too. So we shoot our signal around here. So we kind of know what's going to happen weather-wise to some degree. It's really about a decision of, do I need to get back to shore because there's people on shore I might need to help? So when Matthew came through, we left a day after it happened just simply so we could get back to shore and help reestablish power for several houses that were out, elderly people. But, you know, it's funny. I guess it's kind of the reverse. We got plenty of food, plenty of water. If you have a string and a hook, you can't starve. It's really more a matter of we stay away from things like COVID virus and monitor the people that come out, that sort of thing out here. People have said that this is probably the best place to survive end of times or in a zombie apocalypse. I don't know. As long as we have our connection to shore with the marine band radio, with the internet that we have here, with emergency locator beacons, things like that, probably could sit out here and ignore the world for about a year if you had to.
Nice.
Not that I want to. I got family on shore.
Speaking of that and COVID, I know one big thing is folks coming out there and helping you. Was there downtime? I'm assuming there was downtime where we didn't have folks out on the tower. Yeah. What was it like when the world was going crazy and you're already out on this island? I'm sure for you personally, it wasn't much of a change, but you know, what was it like?
A few years ago, I had finished a job of 11 years and I needed a break. So I came out here and was just here for 6 months straight, went to shore one time. And I noticed that you don't know what day of the week it is anymore. You don't really know what month it is after a period of time. And you start just living, oh, I'm in this season. Oh, gee, I'm getting into fall now. Okay. But during the time that everyone was really locking down on COVID, I was here for a few weeks by myself and isolating. And it was odd because, you know, I turn on the TV, I get it over the air, I get it over the net, I can see everything that's going on. So, you know, you do always have the ability to communicate, same as we all do while we're still locked down. But I think it just made me really appreciate the fact that out here, I have a mask. I've got one in my pocket right now. And anybody that comes out here is going through a questionnaire. Have you been around anyone? Do you have the temperature taking? All that good stuff. They could still be carrying it, but we're trying our best to be just safe about it. So.
Right. Well, speaking of that, we talked about the weather aspect. One thing I also want to mention is I was looking through some of the Twitter mentions for Frying Pan Tower. Water spouts also, I'm sure you get to see your fair share of water spouts out there.
Oh, that's amazing, yeah.
But any other memorable moments? I know you were talking about the meteors a little bit earlier. I mean, you are out in the middle of nowhere, dark skies, so I'm sure you can see all the meteor showers and International Space Station travel across. Any other memorable moments out there? Any sunsets, sunrises?
We did a time lapse of the Neowise comet that was off, and we could see it pretty clearly. And what we didn't realize in our time lapse was that the ISS, International Space Station, came cruising right past. So it's all on the time lapse with there's the comet, there goes the space station, and there's the meteor. It's just, you don't know what you don't know if you're not in a dark enough area to see it. On the same type of thing, you might look down at the water. And I didn't know this, but there's a shrimp variety that when they snap their tail, they make a blue flash. And I'd never heard about that, but I was looking down in the water one evening and all these little blue dots of light, of all these shrimp just pop, 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 pop. And it was like, incredible. How would you have known? So, you know, the wildlife that you don't see when you just look across the ocean is all abundant underneath there. And it's just increased my desire to help educate people. So we have the above camera, the water level camera, and then the shark camera down on the very bottom that we do for explore.org. And that's in classrooms all around the world with kids watching it. Just kind of fun. So hopefully they'll learn about the ocean and, you know, keep the straws out of the turtles' noses and understand the power that is in our oceans. I mean, the weather is by virtue of this enormous body of water that gets heated up and moves around. I mean, the things that our world does, I just think there's so much for us still to learn. And I really applaud what you guys are doing on sharing and discussing what's going on with the weather. Because, you know, it's not a matter of do I have on a jacket so I can go from my apartment to the car. It's what's happening in the world and why are there, you know, storms and fires in different places. That's all about weather and what's happening, right?
Yes, that's true.
The one thing I'd like to learn, those spiny lobsters, how do they compare to Maine lobster? What do they really taste like?
Oh, I had thought they would be, because they're so large, that they would be tough, right? Nah. They have no claws, but they can have very long legs, almost like, a snow crab, those are giant ones. And their tails are usually about that big around, about that long. And they're deliciously fresh and soft. We have divers that come out here and they'll grab them. We have a lot of rock ledges. So if you grab the one or two out of there, next day another one will move in because they're always looking. So they're migrating at night, running around. And they brought up four enormous ones. We filled up a stainless steel bowl that was about this big, full of lobster meat. We all ate, there was six of us, and we ate so much lobster, we couldn't stand it anymore. So the next day when we wanted to go fishing, we're fishing with lobster meat, which is just ridiculous. So it's really, really good.
For those folks who are listening tonight and they may feel like, you know, this is a worthy cause that I want to give to, I know looking at your website, I mean, you've got a shop with apparel that you can do. You have a list on Amazon that folks can purchase and send to you, all sorts of way to help out the cause. So tell us about that. And I even see a signature coffee blend. So tell us about all the different ways that we can help you guys out there doing the research you're doing.
It's really funny. A few times I would have a conversation and talk, you know, people that would be watching about, you know, having this cup of coffee or that cup of coffee. And I finally came across one. And mind you, if you're stuck out here, I'm not going to go and grab a Starbucks or a Pete's or a Dunkin' Donuts. And so I found a blend that was incredible. And the company that makes it, Black Powder, said, well, I'll tell you what, we'll make you that particular variety and we'll give you a percentage of the proceeds for the nonprofit. I thought, oh, win-win. And then they gave me free samples. So I'm going to drink that coffee because it's really, really good. The whole goal is it's not just a YouTube clip that makes you a few pennies, you know, or an Instagram or whatever, or a few shirts that you make a dollar or two off of. It's whether or not we can get enough people to pay attention to this, to restore this. And that really is my goal, is how do we restore something? So it's restore, obviously, protect, which is not only the sea life down there, but also the mariners around here. We've been really lucky. We've actually helped save three different divers' lives out here and over the last few years. And then preserve. Now, how do we get it so it's self-maintaining? And I think the only way to do that is basically what we're doing right now. Sharing the message, educating people, and helping them understand that it's not me. You know, again, I joke, it's like I'm the chief custodian and janitor. But I'm also the one that really wants to get the world to understand that this is a rare thing that was done back a long time ago. And we typically don't do things like this anymore. We don't build big steel structures because we simply don't need to. And it's really worthwhile to save it. That's all we're trying to do.
Interesting that you say that. I was looking, you know, you're on the wish list. You have like an AED, and I never would have put that together with, you know, folks who may be out there and, you know, 30 some miles off the coast and they need immediate medical attention. That's a great thing.
Ever had a heart attack when you had to, you know, get him out of here. We had the helicopter flew out here and grabbed him. So a big Coast Guard helicopter snatched him off. And he was okay. Next day, he was fine.
Wow. Amazing story. Well, Richard, you know, I personally want to thank you for what you're doing. And you were talking about, Dan, about getting some storm chasers out there. We may have to pitch in on a helicopter ride and come out and at least have a meal with you or something.
I'd love to get you guys out for a weekend. And you know what? If you give us enough notice, we'll find a volunteer with a boat and just have you guys come out on that. How's that?
Hey, I am down for that. we are up for that. And again, Richard, how can we follow you? I told about your the Facebook page, but do you have Twitter or anything else that they can follow the work you're doing?
We've got we're either Frying Pan Tower, what is original or something. So we have an Instagram. It's easy to find us. You search Frying Pan Tower. Clearly, there is also in the middle of the woods, a frying pan light tower, not a light tower, but a tree tower for observing for other things. You'll know it when it's us because we have water around us. So we have Twitter, we have YouTube, we have Instagram, we have Facebook, and I don't know what else.
Well, you're talking about
and our website.
Yeah, at theexplore.com, which we got permission to air some of the footage there in Hurricane.
Oh, good. It's explore.org. They're good.
Yeah,
folks.
Explore.org. Yes. Yeah.
They're doing good things.
Definitely check that out.
That's awesome. Yeah, good deal.
Well, Richard, we thank you for your time. And for those who are watching here on the Carolina Weather Group, we hope you have a great rest of your week. And we'll see you next time here on the show.
That's just a small part of what made our WeatherPods Disaster Relief Telethon such a success. Thanks to all of our special guests, our co-hosts, and to you at home, who helped us raise over $7,000 for the American Red Cross and their disaster relief efforts. You can still donate. The link right now in the description, wherever you're watching or listening this week. I'm James Brierton. Thanks so much for spending time with us. We'll see you again next week for more from the Carolina Weather Group. Be well.